The following podcast contains strong language and adult themes and is intended for mature audiences. Listener discretion is advised. Hanky Digital presents The Skin. Show me what lies beneath. An audiobook podcast by Christian Heinke. Chapter 16. Swans. The water swallowed the two men like a seething black hole. A hard blow hit Andy on the forehead. His vision went black. He lashed out and caught Daly's ear, but the killer didn't seem to mind. He put him in a headlock. Everything around Andy became quieter and slower. In slow motion, he groped for Daly's head. Out of instinct, he tried to press his thumb into his eye. Daly evaded him but simultaneously loosened his grip on Andy's neck. With all his strength, Andy jerked his arms and legs, surfaced, and gasped for air. Helen finally pushed the chair out from under the handle and pushed the door open. Out of breath, she leaned against the doorframe and breathed in the cool air. Then she stumbled down the stairs to the dock. Once there, she froze when she saw Catherine with the mask on her face, naked and hanging from chains. In the dock's basin, Andy and Daly were fighting. After looking at her for help, Daly pushed Andy back under the water. Helen thought that this shrink seemed tougher than expected, yet he couldn't do it alone. Then she remembered she needed a weapon if she wanted to help him.
"Do something,"
she heard Catherine shout. Helen glanced at her, then dashed back up the stairs.
"No,"
Catherine shouted after her. Helen stumbled over to Davis's body. She forced herself not to look him in the face.
"Please let that fucker Daly have made one mistake,"
she prayed, pushing up Davis's pant leg.
"God, thank you,"
she thought as she found what she was looking for. In the darkness below, it remained serene and stunning.
"No, darling, it's not beautiful at all. You're drowning,"
Fran told him.
"Great, then I'll be right with you."
"No, I don't want that, darling. Not yet."
"Why not?"
he asked, but he got no answer from his dead wife. Instead, he felt a sharp pain that shattered the peace and darkness. Andy felt a knife in his shoulder. Suddenly, everything became clear again. He lunged, punched Daly in the face, and swam to the surface as fast as he could. He caught his breath before Daly came up behind him, grabbed him again, and twisted the knife back and forth in the wound. Andy cried out in pain, and yet thought he could feel Catherine's embrace, taste her scent. He pondered the impossibility.
"Give up. You can't win, doctor,"
a voice whispered. Did it belong to Daly or Catherine? He didn't know. He frantically thrashed around and caught hold of an arm. Catherine's arm. It was unmistakably her arm. Her skin. Only her skin felt like that. He could still vividly remember. He could still remember.
"Kathy,"
he murmured, his resistance fading. The hand that held his head underwater belonged to Catherine. It was her skin that touched his.
"You're mistaken, my love."
"No, Fran, I'm not mistaken this time."
"Yes, you're mistaken."
"It's her skin, Fran. It's the skin. The skin. Fran?"
Fran fell silent again, instead of someone shouting above him.
"I am a god. Now I am worthy of you, goddess."
The iron grip gave way for a tiny moment, and Andy choked, almost choking on the water, coughing and gagging as he pushed Daly off him with all his might. And a sudden realization dawned on him. The skin held the key. Daly's skin felt like Catherine's,
I'm a god,
he heard Daly repeat, even louder this time.
I'm a god. You don't say, Pezzo de Merda,
another voice replied, and Andy, coming back up, caught sight of Helen. She was kneeling on the stairs, a small pistol in her hand. She waited until Andy was out of the line of fire. Then, she fired. Her first shot hit Daly's right ear. Blood sprayed, and cartilage flew. Helen fired again, hitting Daly in the neck. Eyes wide and mouth open, he stared at her in disbelief, a cry of horror hanging from his lips. Daly grabbed his neck. Blood flowed between his fingers.
My goddess, he gasped.
Andy pushed himself away from the killer's body floating on his back and swam to the shore with the last of his strength. Helen made her way down to the dock, gun in hand. She grabbed Andy by the arm and helped him out of the water. Exhausted, he lay on the edge of the pool and gasped.
Thank you.
She nodded and held out her hand. Swaying, he stood up and dragged himself over to Catherine. Helen followed him. He pulled off Catherine's mask and tossed it aside in disgust, while Helen struggled with the restraints. Catherine sobbed and finally fell into his arms. Helen took off her jacket and draped it over Catherine's shoulders. A spasm shook Catherine's naked body, and she sobbed even louder.
Take her away, Andy,
Helen said.
I'll look.
She paused, startled by a croak, and turned around. Just a step away stood Daly. Later, Helen wondered how he had emerged from the water and where he had found the hand torch. He stood before them, covered in blood, the glowing red light of the burning torch flickering on his handsome face.
My goddess.
For the first time, Helen saw him clearly, and she thought,
I know him, but where from? Where have I seen him before?
Then she remembered, at the elevator in Riverhouse, the young, friendly policeman.
That had been him. That bastard.
Daly took a step toward her.
Helen!
Shouted Andy, and Catherine cried out as well. Helen raised the gun and pulled the trigger. A small hole appeared in Parker Daly's forehead, and the torch he was holding fell to the ground. Flames shot up, racing toward the three of them, and the air filled with acrid smoke.
Get away from there!
Yelled Helen as she took off running. Out of the corner of her eye, she saw Andy, still holding Catherine in his arms, jump into the pool just before she could save herself by jumping into the water. The cold took her breath away at first, and she gasped for air as she resurfaced. Catherine and Andy were swimming next to her. They looked up at the stairs, and Helen's eyes followed theirs. Stunned and silent, they stared at the blazing boathouse. Sirens wailed in the distance. Soon the estate would swarm with police cars, fire engines, and ambulances.
Far too late,
Helen thought. The SWAT team, which Davis had definitely ordered, would also arrive far too late. In the meantime, the flames were consuming the timberwork of the boathouse. The roof collapsed with a crunch, burying not only Daly's body but also those of Davis and Jamie. Arlington Cemetery was usually a more peaceful place early in the morning. Fog shrouded the hollow, the countless white crosses sticking out of it like the masts of an armada of ships of the dead. When Ashera Arnold had summoned him here, the Honorable Senator Williams realized that he had reached the end of his journey. Sure, he could have fled abroad, perhaps to Europe or South America, but that would only have delayed his end. They would have found him. They always found him. Two figures emerged from the fog, one tall and one shorter, Johnson and Ashera.
Morning,
Williams greeted the mismatched pair.
Senator,
Ashera replied coolly. A moment of silence ensued.
It could have worked,
Williams finally said.
Oh, it worked. As far as we know, the regenerative powers of your daughter's skin are remarkable. But Winter destroyed all records of his method, didn't he? That is correct, but we now know that it is possible, so it wasn't all in vain. Then you could actually let me live, Ashera. You know that's not possible, Senator.
She took a step to the side, and he now realized that they were standing at an empty, excavated grave. He stepped to the edge of the pit.
One more thing. What? Promise me you'll leave my daughter alone.
Ashera hesitated. Then she said,
I think I owe you that, Senator. Thank you.
He felt a tingle as behind him, Johnson raised the gun with the silencer. Then there was a soft sound, like a single kernel of corn popping in a hot skillet. Williams's body twisted and then fell into the grave meant for him. Ashera and Johnson looked over the edge of the pit. The senator's face looked peaceful.
his broken gaze fixed against the morning sky.
"Will you keep your promise?"
asked Johnson. Ashera looked at him in surprise. She wasn't used to him questioning her decisions.
"We have lost Winter's work, but now we have an interesting option to continue his research. However, if it doesn't produce the desired results, I won't be able to keep my promise to the senator."
"I see," said Johnson. It sounded reproachful. While Helen was still in Easton, they transferred Davis's charred remains to New York. Phillips offered to pay the condolence visit to Davis's widow, but Helen insisted on doing it herself. It was a sad walk. Looking into the faces of Davis's young children was especially difficult for Helen. She sat in the kitchen with Davis's wife, Laura.
"I'm so sorry,"
Helen said, staring into the steam of the coffee mug. Laura touched her hand conciliatorily.
"Is it true you shot the bastard who did this to John between the eyes?"
Helen hesitated. She had so rarely called Davis by his first name.
"Yes, I did,"
she mumbled.
"Then there's nothing you need to apologize to me for."
After the conversation with Laura, Helen's feelings of guilt didn't disappear, but she felt much better. However, she didn't make any progress elsewhere. She tried to find out who this Ashera Arnold was and which agency she worked for. Phillips got wind of her investigation and offered to help her. After about a week, she called her into his office. Her expression was serious.
"What is it?"
Helen asked, sitting down in the chair she offered her with a curt gesture.
"I will immediately suspend the investigation," she said.
"What?" Helen jumped up.
"Why?"
Phillips motioned for her to sit down again.
"I asked around a bit and called in a few favors from some influential friends. My contacts advised me to stop investigating Ashera Arnold, to avoid serious trouble. Whoever she is and whoever she works for, her position is beyond all jurisdiction."
"But that can't be right, Chief. I mean, this is still America, isn't it?"
"Believe me, Helen, that's what I told myself,"
Phillips replied.
"But obviously that doesn't apply to this Ashera Arnold."
Helen sighed.
"I'm missing far too many answers. Who was this Daly, really? Why did Winter use his skin?"
Phillips gave her a long look.
"Forget it, Helen. You took down the catwalk killer. That has to be enough for you."
"Does it have to?"
asked Helen. The chief didn't answer. She turned away. Helen had the feeling that there was a curve ahead of her, and she didn't know what lay behind it. But she knew she would take this curve and find out what was behind it all, no matter what the chief thought. She left Phillips's office and walked down the corridor directly toward the elevators.
"Do you want to go?"
a man asked as one elevator stopped and the door opened. Deep in thought, Helen stepped in without answering him. And before she could jump out again, the doors closed and the elevator moved off. Helen noticed the movement. She held her breath, waiting for panic to rise up inside her at any moment. But nothing happened. The man looked at her.
"Yes?"
she asked him.
"Nothing. You just have such a beautiful smile."
She looked in amazement at the brass-colored wall paneling that reflected her face. She was smiling. She couldn't remember the last time her face had that expression. Then she remembered the time she went to Easton with Davis. Strangely, the memory didn't make her sad, but filled her with a pleasant feeling, a feeling of warmth.
"Take care, Davis,"
she whispered as she stepped off the elevator and crossed the foyer. She carried her shoulders straight, as if tons of fear had fallen from them. Sometime after the horrific events at St. Michael's, Catherine woke up at Andy's bedside. She had only suffered a few minor physical scratches and bruises from the encounter with Parker Daly, and like all the other injuries before, these healed very quickly. Andy's knife wound was deep and had damaged several nerves. He needed an operation. Otherwise, his arm was in danger of becoming immobile. Afterwards, he faced an intensive period of rehabilitation, but the doctors assured Catherine that he would make a full recovery. The night of the operation, Catherine had barely slept an hour. She tried to reach her father, but to no avail. When she re-entered Andy's room, she noticed that he had regained consciousness.
"I,"
he said, croaking a little.
"Reversed roles." "Yes, the doctors say you'll make a full recovery."
She smiled at him.
"Well, the doctors. Plural. I feel important."
"You are,"
she whispered. He looked at her.
"And you? Are you going to be all right again?"
She returned his gaze and nodded.
"I think so, yes."
but they both knew that only time would tell. Epilogue. When the pain called her again, Catherine didn't feel like smiling.
I was wondering if you'd ever come back,
she greeted him. Almost a year had passed. Catherine had moved out of her estate and into Andy's house. She missed nothing there.
Aren't you deluding yourself?
Asked the pain.
No, not really.
Andy's shoulder was healing well, and the wounds of last summer on Catherine's soul were fading. The news of her father's sudden disappearance hurt her more than she had expected, but not so much that it clouded her time with Andy. But inside, she sensed that this period of peace and contentment was only an interlude. The only lesson she took away from Parker Daly was that she couldn't evade the pain. So she enjoyed the time and let her old new lover believe that their happiness would last forever from now on. 3 months ago, Andy had hired a new secretary and resumed his practice. Catherine had taken up photography, something she had always wanted to do, but had long lacked the courage to pursue. In the meantime, she had had a few exhibitions in smaller galleries. One in Boston had even been a genuine success. Andy believed she was doing it for her own sake. But in reality, she wanted to create something that would remind him of her. She realized this now as she slipped his shirt on. He was asleep. His breathing was calm and even.
Take care, my love,
she thought, looked at him again, and left the house. It had been more out of forgetfulness and laziness. Somehow she had forgotten to take the pill, and now her period was more than a week overdue. Nothing to worry about, she told herself, but then she felt sick in the morning and knew she was pregnant. She just knew it. Just to be sure, she drove into town and bought a pregnancy test at Safeway. This morning, after Andy had gone to the office, she had taken the test. The digital display unequivocally displayed pregnant. With this certainty, the pain had returned. Everything would now start all over again. She would give birth to Andy's child and make her already perfect little happiness even more perfect. And then, at some point, she would lose them both to the pain again. She couldn't let that happen, even if it meant plunging Andy into another misfortune. It all had to end. It was better this way. He turned around and felt for her, but her side of the bed was empty.
Kath?
He murmured.
Kath,
he called a little louder. He sat up. For a moment, he thought everything was fine. She was just getting herself a glass of water. Hadn't she been feeling a little nauseous over the last few days? But then the pleasant veil of his illusions fell away. She was gone. And this time, for good.
No, Kath,
he thought.
Please don't do this to me.
He jumped out of bed and got dressed. He dashed into the garage. The vanity was there, parked in the same place as always. He had refloated the boat last month. He and Kath were planning to take a brief trip out into the bay in the next few weeks. But if Catherine didn't do the same to Fran and take the vanity out into the bay on her own, where was she? He jumped in the car and sped off. They still hadn't repaired the boathouse on Catherine's former estate. He ran along the jetty, which now ended in scorched sadness, calling her name over and over.
Catherine! Catherine!
Something white and semi-transparent wafted toward him.
A veil? An apparition? The ghost of his dead wife?
He almost expected it to slip through his fingers like mist as he reached out for it.
Don't be silly.
He got hold of it. The shirt belonged to him. He smelled it. It smelled of perfume. But not Fran's perfume.
Catherine!
He called out into the bay.
No, it couldn't be.
He couldn't lose another woman to the water.
Catherine,
he shouted, as if out of his mind. As he ran, he stumbled out of his shoes, almost fell, ran onto the jetty, and then jumped into the water.
Catherine,
he swam around for a few minutes. Then he felt the cold of the water taking its toll on him. He called her name a few more times, then swam ashore. He crawled to the shore, burying his hands in the damp sand. He howled and sobbed. A wave washed over him, and he crawled further up. There he found her. She was sitting in the sand in her nightgown. The shirt was damp, her hair still wet, so she'd already been in the water. He crawled to her.
Kath,
he whispered. She didn't look at him, but hid her face behind her tightened knees.
Kath,
he said again. Then he was with her, caressing her. She flinched as if she feared his anger. But he wasn't angry. He was just glad that she hadn't left him behind. She clung to him as if she were about to drown. But maybe that was the case.
I'm sorry,
she whispered. He said nothing, just embraced her.
She stayed,
he thought.
God, thank you, she stayed.
They held each other and were silent.
Maybe this is the answer,
Catherine thought. She could never escape the pain forever. But with Andy and their unborn child, they might cope with the pain. At this moment, on this night, here on the beach, everything spoke in favor of this possibility.
Possibility. A good word.
She looked at it from all sides, letting it roll around in her mind like a pretty marble. It promised hope. That was all she needed.
We idolize the flawless face, chasing dreams in a hollow race, blind to whispers beneath the sheet, ignored pains in the in-between. White swans on the water skin, hiding wounds deep within. Beauty fades, the veil grows thin, rotten flesh beneath the grin. If we dare to look below, what stories would the shadows show? Fragile hearts and tattered souls, broken pieces seeking hope. White swans on the water skin, hiding wounds deep within. Beauty fades, the veil grows thin, rotten flesh beneath the grin.
Thank you for listening. To learn more about Heinke Digital Audiobook Podcasts and its author, Christian Heinke, please visit heinke.digital.